takeaways, frustrations, fears, elations?
I think I would just rehash a lot of what we talked about. I think the main thing is there's a clear disconnect between the working class, not just the white working class, but the working class in general and the Democratic Party. And I think it has finally broken. And I think that's something to keep in mind. It's a source of pain right now, but I think a source of opportunity to think a different type of party, not necessarily the Democratic Party per se, or a different type of Democratic Party. I think that's one thing, and the other thing is what we talked about, and you were just, you know, really pinpointing it perfectly, which is these blocs are not as homogeneous as we think. There is no such thing as a Hispanic and Latino vote. I mean, just because there's already a huge fight between people that don't like to be called Hispanic right. and people that don't like to be called Latino, just there's already a disconnect. So I think those two are quite important.
There's this really good comedian who we have to have on the show named Arish Singh, who actually went to a Trump rally and wears a turban. He went to this Trump rally in a turban, and he unfurled a sign that said, stop hate or something. He got kicked out. And his thing is, which he always says, is like, it's nice when white people want their friends, like, think they're being allies when they're, like, calling out working class, ignorant racists. Like, that's touching, but it's actually not good for me. Like, I'm the one who's going to walk down the street and face the consequences of your, like, not dealing with this issue, which I always think is a kind of, like, amazingly powerful thing to think about. But I do think that there's this weird conservativization of liberal or left politics where no one on the left would like, condone or get on board with the idea that, like, you did that crime, well, lock them up forever, like, or we got to bomb terrorists out of existence, right? Like, people, liberals, not even the left, liberals, I think of that as kind of backwards and punitive and draconian, and they know it doesn't work, right? Moralism aside, they know it doesn't work. But when it comes to race class issues, I feel like they're there. They're like, I don't care about where you're coming from. Like, I'm not interested in this. I'm zero tolerance policy.
But here's the thing. I mean, this, you know, this is really important to say. The exact same critique that we're applying to liberals has to be applied to the left as well, in which the left has not done a good job of reaching out to people of color, the socialist left, the radical left, and that had a lot to do with Bernie losing the nomination. I think that Bernie Sanders would have been a much better candidate.
Well, if you're enjoying the live Katie Halper show, coming to you direct from 388 Atlantic Avenue on the ground floor, you should have been here, because it will continue. If you're in the neighborhood, you might want to drop by. In the meantime, here at WBAI New York, we resume our regular broadcast schedule. Stay tuned next for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Kyle.
Hi.
And Bernie S.
Greetings from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which is now a red state.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that a little bit. We're going to talk about a bunch of things. This is going to be, a rather difficult show for us in many ways. A difficult show for many people. You know, it's interesting. Coming in to New York from the island earlier today, you just get this weird sense that everybody is kind of in a sense of shock, you know, and you see it in the way people are moving or as they're walking around the streets. You see it in the way they're driving, certainly, which is far more erratic than normal. And, you know, you've seen it since last night on TV and over the radio and just people you might be interacting with online and getting phone calls from. It's just been a day and an evening of shock. I've heard from so many people how they're not getting any sleep, how they basically don't know what to do next. And I think the important thing at this stage is to just recognize that we are not alone, that there are so many of us right now feeling the way we are feeling, and it's okay. That's the way you're supposed to feel. The one thing that would be so much worse than the results of last night's election would be if we were okay with it, if we didn't feel anything. You know, if we were just able to get about our business and not feel like crap, you know, because that would mean something inside of us had died. So this feeling that we're feeling right now, this feeling of despair and hopelessness and depression, that is normal. That is healthy. But don't face it alone. Reach out to people. Talk to people. Talk to your friends. Check. Make sure people are okay. You know, because we get to come on the radio and share this with you folks out there. And we're going to take phone calls and you can talk to us. But there might be people, you know, who have no outlets, have no way of expressing themselves, who are feeling really, really bad right now. And like I said, it's a normal feeling. It's something that we should be feeling. And we're going to have to face a lot of things together. But we're going to be together when we face it. One thing to remember, and I didn't even realize this until today, there are more of us than there are of them. Now, if you want to make it an us versus them thing, I got to say, you know, I don't think I'm unique in phrasing it in that way. I think that's pretty much the way this whole campaign has been from the beginning. But if you want to say us versus them, yeah, there are more of us. There are more Democrats, progressives, liberals, gay people, Muslims, Mexicans, you name it. And we scare the crap out of the other people. Remember that. Remember that we scare them. And that's why they came out in droves. But even coming out in droves, more people voted for Hillary Clinton than for Donald Trump. But because of our screwed up system, which is not going to change, by the way, so don't even waste your breath on that. Because of that system, they get the office. They get everything. Okay, you know what? They get all the responsibility too. They get all the blame because things are going to go horribly wrong. I got to tell you, just looking at all the things that Donald Trump has promised people, that he's going to solve healthcare, that he's going to solve the economy, that he's going to solve immigration and all these things that he has absolutely no clue what he's doing. We basically just put a sex predator in the White House who does not have an iota of a clue as to what to do next and is going to have to rely on all kinds of experts that he's already insulted. People are going to figure out pretty quickly that this was a huge mistake. And we need to think back on our lives. Think back on all the injustices we faced over time, whether it's in our schools, in our houses, in our workplaces, in any institution. And think of when you got the most change. Was it when things were going okay? Or was it when things stopped going okay and pissed you off for the last time and got you to react? And I hope that the reaction will be so much stronger than the action has been up until now. Because, folks, the action was not enough. That, you know, maybe you want to blame the DNC. Maybe that makes you feel better. Personally, I think the blame is on us. I don't think we did enough. I think we spent too much time focusing on nitpicking and saying who would have been better even though they had no chance. You had idiots like Jill Stein. I'm sorry, that's very disrespectful. I'm sorry. Idiots like Dr. Jill Stein coming on these very airwaves, talking about North Dakota and the pipeline and saying how Hillary Clinton was doing bad things too and not saying a word about Donald Trump. Yeah, criticize Hillary Clinton. But to give Donald Trump a pass, that enabled people to entertain the thought process that, yeah, well, maybe that kind of a change would be a good thing. In fact, the reason I call her an idiot is because she has gone on record as saying that Donald Trump is less dangerous than Hillary Clinton. And I'm sorry, anybody who calls themselves left of center who believes that is an idiot. Sorry. That's just the way I feel. And I'm not going to apologize for it. I'm not going to be apologizing for a lot of things from this point on. You know, it doesn't really matter. But I'll listen. And I think we all have to do a lot of listening, but we all have to do a lot of talking too. And we all have to do a lot of marching and shouting and just showing up and uniting and not tearing ourselves apart, because that's what always does us in, is when we tear ourselves apart. You know, we have so much. We've gained so much. And we're going to know how much we gain because we're going to see it all start to disappear. And I know there are all kinds of problems with Obama. I know that. But it was our inability to focus on the good and to support him when he needed us to support him. Sure, it's not everything. It's not the second coming. It's not the perfect leader. So much was wrong. We can focus on that, but if you do focus primarily on that, then you lose the good with the bad when you get rid of that particular leader. And that is what we've accomplished right now. We've gotten rid of them. We've gotten rid of Obama. We've gotten rid of Clinton. And we've embraced something that I really never thought something like this would happen in this country in my lifetime. But the other part of all that is the reaction. I never thought I'd see revolution in this country in my lifetime. And I think maybe I'm going to see that now. Maybe I'm going to see, you know, some actual insurrection that matters, that's not fragmented and splintered into a million pieces, something where we can all unite. Because come January, when we realize what has been unleashed, I think there will be lots and lots of angry people. And I think we'll start to realize, hey, we are so much stronger together than we are fragmented. And, you know, maybe we'll start using this radio station more as a voice of resistance. Wouldn't that be nice? We have the tools. We have the ability. We have the desire. We just have to put it all together and react. So today's a difficult day. It's actually 9/11 in most parts of the world. Can you believe that? Because they do day, month format. And it's November 9th. A lot of people don't get that. So, I know it's distasteful to compare it to 9/11, but I don't think I've felt this way since then. I know I haven't gotten as many emails and phone calls from people all over the world asking if I'm okay since then. So, it's an apt comparison. And when you consider how many people are going to die, and a lot of people are going to die because of this. Why? Well, okay, climate change alone. If Donald Trump is able to undo the Paris Accord like he promised to, or just basically make it more acceptable to think of climate change as some kind of a hoax, millions will die. Humans and wildlife of all sorts, and maybe even the entire planet. You consider this lunatic having his finger on the nuclear button, what that could entail? Think about all the police who will be able to murder people and not have anybody criticizing them, not have anybody in power. Think of the wars that will start as a result of ignorance and prejudice and fear and hatred. And the original 9/11 was going to look like a pretty good day, actually, compared to what will be unleashed here if this goes on for any significant amount of time. So, yeah, we have a lot ahead of us, a lot of bad things ahead of us. But we're together. And we're going to stay together. And I'm lucky to have this community. The hacker community, the radio community, the BAI community, the New York community, the thinking community all around the world. You know, I can't think of anything more disturbing than being in a red state. And I'm thinking of you, Bernie, but I'm thinking also of people in really red states out there in the middle of the country who feel very alone right now. We can go to New York City. We can hang out in the East Village. We can feel a lot better with a lot of people, but you might not have that option. You might be alone in your community where you are. And you have to remember you're not. You're not alone. It's going to be difficult ahead. Your very existence, your very identity might be questioned, condemned, threatened in all sorts of ways. But you have to remain strong and know that there are people that will have your back. And we have to remember them. We have to stick together. And that is what we are facing now, the day after Election Day 2016. How about you guys? How was your night last night?
Well, just great. Oh,
yeah?
Yeah, great night. Oh, everything's fine. No, I can't even do that. It's, in one sense, I'm relieved that campaigning is over. I can feel really good about that. But what quickly fills that void is the uncertainty of what's next. What that means for me, what that means for the people I care about. There's a lot of hyperbole, there's a lot of rhetoric, there's a lot of puffery that has come with that campaign that ended. But I don't feel equipped to feel confident that things are going to be as ideal as they were perhaps presented by the side that won, right? But in spite of that, I have resolve to continue to participate. And I'm glad you said that. People out there in the middle might need to speak up, might need help, might need people to listen to, and I would echo that. Please talk to people. Listen as well, but really find your community, find who your alliance is, where those will be in the next couple weeks, couple months, however long it takes. That's really, really important to have that affinity and the listening of people in your community, however small that is. Maybe it's virtual. We do have that still to a degree. And use the tools and resources, just like you said with this particular resource, the radio station. There's a lot of levers. There's a lot of mechanisms. I think that's basically what we are left with as far as interfacing with the political machinations. And I would say, with that resolve I have to participate, to stay here and persist, and speak out and use my critical thinking, I have confidence that I have confidence that we'll We'll definitely see a response. We'll definitely be surprised by the unity that is being suggested both by the government and the campaigns and so on right now. So I guess with that, I don't really know how to sum it up and what to speak to other than I'm certain of a lot of people are not going to give up looking at these issues, looking at the way we're governed, the way we're influenced even, and that we'll have another chance at this, and we'll see where it goes. But I think it's prudent to be vigilant and related, like you said, with people, however that manifests itself for you.
Yeah, in regards to what you're saying about, okay, yeah, the campaign is over. That in itself, I was saying early yesterday that whichever way this goes, at least we're done dealing with that particular campaign, that particular election season. And yeah, that's kind of a load off my mind as a journalist, as a human being, as whatever. But yeah, now it's time to look at what happened and the consequences. And yeah, my election night and this morning was spent getting in touch with the people close to me in my life and reminding one another that, yeah, we're still here for one another, we're still in this together, we're still, none of us are alone, because it's very easy to start feeling alone in all this. And taking the train from my home to my job this morning, I don't think I've ever seen the trains that quiet, that universally downcast. It was a population wounded, and a colleague of mine from work compared it to, because she was living in the neighborhood at the time, the people after September 11, 2001. And I believe that. It sounds silly, but I believe that. But the thing to remember is we are here. We do still have this community. We have all these communities that we bring together here on this program: the hacker community, the radio community, the activism community, the community of people who are just curious enough to turn their dial here and listen and get involved. And that's what's gotten us as a population through so much in the past, and that's what's going to get us through again this time. We've done it before, not in this particular context or this particular situation, but we've done it before, and we will damn well do it again. And yeah, that we are here. We're not going away. We're not going to sit by and be quiet. As Sidney Lumet said in his film Network, you know, the first thing is you've got to get mad, and I think we're all plenty mad. So we'll see where it goes from here.
Yeah. Well said, both of you. Bernie, checking in. How are you doing down there in Pennsylvania?
Well, I'm a bit despondent. It's been a pretty gray and cold day here, which is appropriate. But I, many of our listeners know I was volunteered for several months for the Bernie Sanders campaign this year and for the primary here in Philadelphia, which unfortunately did not win. We later saw how the Democratic Party was trying to sabotage his campaign. But in any case, earlier this week, Monday night, I felt like I was at ground zero of this election campaign season, when the President of the United States and Hillary Clinton and the Vice President and the President's wife and top musical acts were all performing and begging for people to come out and vote in front of Independence Hall. So I thought, man, they must be in trouble. They see information that we don't have access to, and they would not have pulled out such a big rally, you know, night before Election Day, were they not really feeling the pinch. And last night I went to a party of several hundred people to watch the election returns. It was called the Pussy Grabs Back party, and there were a lot of great people there. We had a variety of ceramic objects to throw at targets to, you know, have a cathartic outlet for our anger as the polls came in. And I stayed there till about 2:30 when I realized we would be having a Trump administration in the near future. So I've just been trying to wrap my mind around that today. Of course, like you all, exchanging concerns with our friends and family member. Are you okay? How are you feeling? A lot of people aren't feeling well. But like you said, Emmanuel, the folks that shifted the election in this way last night aren't really afraid of us. But they're only really afraid of us if we take action and vote, and not enough of us did that. So, you know, the folks listening to this show have access to, you know, tools and resources, technical tools and resources that not everybody, uses on a regular basis, but, you know, we've seen how this community can change legislation, strike things down. Remember Aaron Swartz. We remember a lot of things that this community is capable of doing, and you know, this administration has 2 years with as you pointed out, at a full responsibility in the House and the Senate and the executive branch and the White House of what goes on. And if they screw things up in the next 2 years, they're going to be losing at least the Senate and maybe the House. And we need to keep really active and make people know of what this administration is trying to do and how it's going to affect them from a technical perspective, you know, whether it's net neutrality or privacy, electronic privacy, domestic surveillance by federal agents, by intelligence agencies. A lot of this stuff I fear is going to start happening. And we got the gist of that from Donald Trump's, some of his speeches, that, you know, the gloves are going to come off again, sort of thing. So I'm not looking forward to that, but we have to be really vigilant and be observant and communicate and convince all people we know, like, hey, this is what's going on. And if enough people take notice, we might be able to change the course of history back in a sane direction.
Well, you mentioned rightfully so that not enough of us voted, even though the popular vote was won, but more should have definitely voted. Voting isn't the only thing that they're scared of when it comes to our numbers. It's our presence, it's our actions, and I don't want people to think that this is it until the next election. It's not. Your very presence, whenever they try something, and we need to be aware of whenever they try something. That presence is what's going to make the difference. Remember this one fact. There is not a government on this planet that has ever existed on this planet that is not scared to death of its citizens. All right, that's a very important fact. And we need to make sure that these guys are scared of us. And we need to be in their face every step of the way, and we need to make it as difficult as possible, if not impossible, for them to get anything they want that we do not want. And we cannot be shy. And there will be a price to pay for this. Absolutely. But we can't hold back because we've been doing that too much. And this is the result. So, yeah, be afraid of them, but make them more afraid of us, because there's a lot more of us than there are of them. And, you know, it goes beyond just the electorate in this nation. Think of the entire world. Think how this affects other nations, other people. And just the progress of humanity. Okay, I understand we have, what do we have, Rob? We have somebody calling in on the phone?
We appear to. Caller, can you introduce yourself, please?
Ben, can you hear me all right?
I'm sorry, introduce yourself again. I had the wrong thing up. Go ahead.
I'm at the Trump protest.
Who are you again?
It's pretty wild here.
Who is this on the phone?
Cameron. Cameron Beck.
Okay. Go ahead. And you're where now?
All right. Sorry, the phone connection's a bit difficult.
Okay, we can hear you now.
All right, that's good. I'm at the Donald Trump protest, and things are pretty wild. I decided to go just for a little journalism and to see what it was all about. I'm not a particular fan of Trump. And we started off in Union Square. That's where it all began. There was lots of police urging people to stop jumping the fence to get into the park. They were kind of controlling the flow of traffic. And by the way, I would like to say the police are doing a fantastic job. Most of them admit that they also hate Trump, which is kind of funny. But then we marched slowly but surely all the way to the Trump Tower. And police started threatening arrests. They walk around with zip ties, and they blast on loudspeakers what our rights are, informing us that if we stay in the street, arrests will be made. A few helicopters now, and overall, the energy of the crowd here is absolutely fantastic. People are shouting about love, about freedom, and I think this is a perfect example of what happens when New York comes together.
Absolutely. I got news for you, by the way. Even if you get off the street, they will arrest you. So just be careful of that. But where is the Trump Tower? Is that the one on Wall Street? There's so many of them. Which one is this?
It's pretty crowded, so it's hard to tell.
Well, what part of Manhattan are you in?
We walked up 30 something Street, I think.
Okay, so you're in the Midtown area.
I think around Fifth Avenue. Yeah, Midtown.
Okay. All right. Well, then, and it's still going on right now.
Dying down a little bit, but still going on nonetheless.
Okay.
The police have created sort of a barricade between the street and the Trump Tower, and they ever so.
You still with us? Well, apparently a lot of people are using cell phones in that area. That's what I would imagine. Signals are being curtailed. Yep, and we lost a call. That was Dent calling in from a Trump protest, anti-Trump protest in Manhattan. And I'm sure that won't be the last one. And that's something that we do need to see more of, is expression and a lot of... a lot of turnout. Is this Dent again?
No, it's not Dent.
Oh, who's Nick. This?
It's Nick.
Nick. Okay, Nick. Well, as long as you found our phone number, I guess we'll give you the floor. What's on your mind?
Yeah, well, I agree with everything that you guys have said. One person I would like to add, I know it's not going to be popular because I know you guys like him a lot, but I think Julian Assange really acted despicably during this campaign. He has a pathological hatred, obviously, of Hillary Clinton. And I think what he did was unforgivable, releasing these emails every couple of weeks to make her look bad. And I think he's, to me, is almost as despicable as Gary Johnson or Jill Stein, because the media just were attracted to that so much whenever he leaked these negative stories about her from these stupid emails. And I think he has to bear some of the blame for giving us Trump.
Interesting. Well, let me just say a couple of things to that. You make some really interesting points. Regarding Jill Stein and Gary Johnson, I don't think they're despicable for running at all. I think we need more third-party candidates. I call Jill Stein an idiot because of what she said, because of actually thinking Trump would be a safer candidate than Clinton, and encouraging people to believe that. That to me is crazy talk. As far as Julian, I hear what you're saying, and I've been very conflicted on this myself, and I know a lot of other people have. It does seem as if he was releasing things simply to make Hillary Clinton look bad. If that is the case, then I agree with you 100%. If, however, he was simply releasing material that he had received anonymously that affected one particular candidate, then he can claim he was acting as a journalist. I know that's kind of difficult to accept, especially with the absence of any Trump material. And that's what bothers me the most. Is it possible he just didn't receive any material on Donald Trump that made him look bad? And you know, it goes beyond that. I mean, you can look at The Intercept, very little criticizing Donald Trump and a whole lot criticizing Hillary Clinton. It's not just these guys. So many people on the left targeted Hillary Clinton. And I'm not saying anything that they were saying is necessarily inaccurate. It might be exaggerated a bit. But when you consider what the alternative was, and to not believe that that would be the consequence of completely decimating that candidate, that to me is highly irresponsible and something that people really should have thought through.
Right. Well, I'm just saying I can never look at Julian Assange as a hero again after this, because I do think he has to look himself in the mirror and question what he did, because I do think that he helped in part give us Trump, because he made Hillary Clinton's character an issue in this case. He helped magnify her character issues, and I do think that's unforgivable, because we have 4 years now to suffer under Donald Trump, and I don't know if we're going to survive.
Yeah, I do believe Assange made a statement today to the effect of, yes, he received the material from the Clinton campaign, but he didn't receive comparable material from regarding the Sanders or Trump or whatever campaigns. But yeah, I totally do hear this issue, and I'm very conflicted on it myself. But what I'm most interested in right now, because we can't change the past, we can only learn from it. And what we can do with these emails now that have been leaked is, I have no doubt in my mind that you would find the same batch of communications behind the scenes at every political campaign that has happened, basically, in this country. And I think we should take these lessons as, the next time this comes around, the next time we have the chance to get behind a candidate or get involved with the whole process, think of what we've learned from these emails and think of what's going on then in the situation that will be in front of us. And only then can we I think, make a more informed decision about what we want to hitch ourselves to, what we want to get involved with, and how they might be doing whatever deals behind the scenes.
And if anyone has Donald Trump emails, we want to see those, because I can't imagine any campaign or any even individual who has all of their emails leaked and looks good. I don't think that's possible. So obviously, if you're going to leak somebody's emails, they're going to look bad, especially any politician. Even, you know, I dare say, I say it, Bernie Sanders, if his emails were leaked, I'll bet we'd find things in there that would make him look bad. You know, if you target one particular candidate, yeah, that's, as the caller said, that's something that's shameful if you're doing it for the purpose of just making them lose and not thinking about the consequences of making them lose. It's also shameful if this material was in the hands of WikiLeaks while Bernie Sanders could still have won.
Right.
Imagine that. Imagine if leaking this back in the spring could have made him the candidate, because he would have won. He would have beaten Trump. There's no question about that. And can you imagine a President Sanders? I mean, you can imagine, you know, anything now that there's a President Trump. You can imagine a President Colonel Sanders. You can imagine literally anything, because nobody saw this coming. And you look at every late night TV pundit, you look at even the President of the United States. Barack Obama said he's not going to be, I believe he said he's not going to be the candidate. He's not going to be the president. And we all agreed with him, because it was the most ridiculous thing ever. You saw what John Oliver did a couple of years ago, where he said, please, Donald Trump, run. We want you to, because it would have been so ridiculous and such a huge waste of time. But this country has a way of swerving into the unreasonable arena and making fantasy into reality. Some people call that making your dreams come true. But nightmares are dreams too. And now we've got one. Hey, thanks for your call.
You guys do a great job.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And our phone number, by the way, for those who didn't already know it, is 347-335-0818. We can only take one call per – we used to be able to take 12. Now we can only take one. But the good news is that if you don't get through, you get a little pulsating tone that'll tell you you didn't get through, so you won't be wasting your time. And if we're talking while you're ringing, the ring lasts a long time now, so that's good too. So 347-335-0818.
I just would add to that that I think there's an undertone, and I've found this in my travels in Europe, that a lot of people are dissatisfied with the corporate the genesis of corporatization, globalization, having its roots and tax shelters, I don't know, Delaware corporations, having all of that come from America. And that resentment manifests itself in a deep desire for the American experiment to completely implode upon its own people, which... As a traveler, it's you find yourself being a diplomat trying to explain, like, yeah, it's a slow system, yeah, it this, and oh, and yeah, we're doing, you know, and you finally have to stop trying to make a case for it, because you cannot convince people that this country has virtues anymore.
Dude, I'm hanging up my diplomat hat, I'll tell you that right now, because I don't think I can do it. I don't think I can.
Yeah. Yeah. And jokes on them, because they're getting exactly the opposite of everything we ever tried to say diplomatically about this country.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be rah-rah. So, yeah, we'll see you out there. Thanks for nothing.
All right. Let's take a phone call. Good evening. You're on the radio.
Hello. This is Steven from Long Island. How are you guys doing tonight?
Oh, we've had better nights.
Super duper.
Yeah, it's weird. I'll tell you that.
It's almost like I'm listening to you at your regular time with the clock set back.
Okay. I'm not sure what that means exactly.
Me either.
We used to be on from 7 to 8, but...
Right. I just want to hit you with a different way of looking at this situation.
Okay.
You don't protest an election unless it is a fraud. I think the protesters are making a mistake. Trump hasn't actually done anything. The election was supposedly legitimate. It's not like when Bush stole the election in 2000. And to go out there and preemptively strike against this unknown quantity, I think, is a huge mistake, and it's going to push Donald Trump right into the hands of the most extreme Republicans. He's going to put far right-wing judges on the Supreme Court. They're going to obliterate what's left of the Fourth Amendment. And the people, and we know a lot of people voted for Trump, are going to see the protesters as the instigators. That's the way I see it strategically. I think that the people need to wait until he actually does something substantial and then protest.
Okay, let me just break in here. He has done something substantial. He's spoken. He's opened his mouth. He's, from the very first day when he announced his candidacy, he has done things that have completely disgusted civilized people all around the world. That's what they're out there protesting. They're not protesting the election. We know we lost the election. We know the system is messed up, and that even though Clinton got more votes, somehow she lost the election. Fine. That's how our system works, which will never change because Republicans control everything. But people are out there because they're angry that this lunatic, this sex offender, is now going to be running our country and a good part of the world and possibly destroying a lot of it in the process. That's what they're protesting. I don't think they should wait and see and give him an opportunity to make that prophecy come true. I hear what Hillary Clinton is saying. I hear what Barack Obama is saying. We owe him a chance. No, we don't owe him anything. They have to say that. They don't want riots in the street. They don't want to be responsible for that. But we're the people, all right? And we know what he said. We know what he stands for. And we don't have to wait until Inauguration Day to protest that.
Well, you have nearly as many people that voted for him, though, so it's almost like a clash of the people. And what is that going to do with the establishment? It's going to entrench them. They're going to have their own, let's say, pawns fighting against these protesters, creating a pandemonium, and in the chaos, they're just going to absorb more of the wealth and take away more of the freedom.
Well, I maintain there are more of us than there are of them. I also believe many of the people who voted for Trump did so for the wrong reasons, and those are the people that, yeah, after he takes power, they will see what a fraud he is and how much they're being hurt by this, and then they can join the people who are already protesting against him. That's what I hope.
Absolutely, but I think we should wait until he actually makes a significant misstep. I think in the 2000 election, when the people protested Bush's inauguration to the point where they had to hide it on TV in the rain, remember that?
I was there.
That was a good pro. Oh, great, yeah. If you're from WBAI, where else would you be, right?
I don't want to go to this one, though. I'm actually, I don't want to be anywhere near it. I don't even think I want to be in the country. But I do want to protest and to prevent, however possible, anything that this guy wants to do that is harmful to this nation. And I think that's our obligation, not our right. It's our duty.
You got to give him a little bit of rope for the sake of letting the other people see that it's not his opposers starting the crap.
Well, he's brought his own rope and he's already using it. I think we need to react.
Also, one of the often overlooked functions of a protest is not just to say to the target, hey, we don't like you. It's to say to the rest of the world, hey, we're a bunch of people that don't like him. It's a message to the community. It's a message to the world in general that, no, we're not all going to stay quiet about this. We're not going to go gently into that good night. We're angry. We're upset. And here we are.
And this is where we fail, too. In the months leading up to all this, there should have been protests every single day. All of his events should have been disrupted. There should have been so much more anger, and not just having an equal number of representatives from his camp versus the other camp, because that legitimized everything. The media helped to create this nightmare. There's no way a rational country would ever elect a reality TV show host to be the most powerful man in the world, especially one with his temperament. But the media made that possible by elevating him, by legitimizing him, by saying, oh, well, he doesn't believe in global warming. And let's pair somebody who does believe in global warming and we'll have a one-on-one debate. It doesn't work that way. You know, you have sometimes absolute right and absolute wrong. And there are so many absolute wrongs here that have been legitimized. And that should have been protested for so long. We should have been so much more vocal and loud. And we need to make up for that now. Don't wait for Inauguration Day. Get out there right now. Thanks for your call. Let's see if we can fit in any more. Our phone number is 347-335-0818. Bernie, what's anything that you have to say about that?
Well, I just wanted to briefly go back to what you were saying about what a caller said about Julian Assange. He made an announcement, I think, yesterday or this week on Russian television saying that he did not receive the leaked John Podesta emails from the Clinton campaign from Russia. I'm not sure how he'd know that, since the way WikiLeaks technology works is he's not able to know who sent him stuff.
Also, you know, is that really the best way to make people believe that it didn't come from Russia, is to make the statement on Russian TV?
I think that just seems like not a good choice of mediums. But he made an interesting he was quoted as saying something interesting. Julian Assange said on Russian TV, Hillary Clinton is just one person. I actually feel quite sorry for Hillary Clinton as a person, because I see someone who is eaten alive by their ambitions, tormented literally to the point where they become sick, for example, faint, as a result of going on with their ambitions. Some people might say that describes Julian Assange. But in any case, I value what WikiLeaks does. I'm just not sure if the way it handled things this time was in the United States' best interests.
Or in the best interest of a free and open debate as to where this actually was taking us. It's something we're going to be talking about for a very, very long time. I think also, you know, that Julian is kind of going to be the victim in this as well, because had Hillary won, I think he would have been completely safe to come out of the embassy and maybe be prosecuted in Sweden, maybe have some paperwork to fill out in the UK. But if Hillary Clinton had gone after him at that point and had him extradited to the United States, even among her fiercest advocates, she would have looked so evil, so bad. I think there would never have been a safer time for him to walk out that door. And he might think that it's safe now with Donald Trump in power, but boy, you know, just like Kim.com, that guy actually endorsed Donald Trump. Can you believe that? He endorsed Donald Trump thinking that somehow that's going to keep him from being extradited to the United States. Got news for you, pal. It's not going to. Do not believe anything these people say. They are not your friends. And especially somebody like Donald Trump. You know, the only person really involved in things being leaked that seemed to get it is Edward Snowden. If you watch what Edward Snowden, he was the only one that seemed to really grasp the true horror of what we were facing. And the fact that now this guy, Donald Trump, is now going to be in charge of the surveillance.
Yeah.
Think about how scary that is.
All that stuff that's on the shelf is there for the implementing.
And I know our self-hating left-wing people want to blame the Democrats for that. And yeah, they do share a lot of the blame, as any ruling class would, any politician would. But do you really think that the right wing would not have done the exact same thing if they were in power? Do you really think the right wing would not be using drones, would not be using surveillance, would not be doing all the things that we criticize Obama for doing? I think anyone in that office, maybe even Bernie Sanders, would find themselves doing these unpalatable things, because sometimes the office is more powerful than the person. I think that's something Donald Trump might find out too, but what a ride that's going to be. Let's see if we can fit in another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi, it's Delcini.
Hey, Delcini, how are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, it's going, it's an interesting day.
I bet. I have a few comments to what you guys were talking about. And, you know, obviously people did feel low today. I, for some reason, I don't know what happened, saw something like that coming. And I think one thing we need to do is hit the ground running.
Mm-hmm.
And I think looking at the media and the complicity of the media during this whole campaign is really important. And I think working on a media blackout of some kind. Then there's also, we should look at the other rumors that are going out there, and I think it has to do with the FBI investigation and other factors into it, like the second in charge in the FBI and the campaign contributions to his wife by a Clinton aide. Then also the sources of where the WikiLeaks information comes from, because there's speculation that might be coming from the security community, those kind of things. It's just so bizarre how many rumors are out there that have gone, you know, virtually unnoticed in this whole circus that we were subjected to. And I think a lot of this is going to be, you know, important for us to realize how we're going to proceed going forward as the people of this country, because I think there are so many other factors at stake or involved that run the show, and I don't think Julian Assange is really, you know, a person that has the power to change things the way people think he did. I think that there's more behind that.
Well, interesting thing, because you bring up a very good point. I think especially people in the hacker community, and especially people who have access to sensitive information, they have an obligation now as well to share that information if it reveals things that change the landscape. And right now with these people, and I'm talking about people like Chris Christie and Giuliani and, of course, Trump and Pence, with them getting into power, there is a treasure trove of information leading to scandals involving every single last one of them. And we need to make sure that they get at least as much attention as Hillary Clinton got over the past few months. Because I guarantee you, whatever we find on them, we'll bury them. Absolutely. And we need to basically work on bringing down this government as much as we possibly can. It sounds very radical. It sounds very serious, but that's what they do in other countries. They bring down governments because they don't like them. They don't agree with them. They're bad for the people. And we can bring down this government with the truth, with information. And that's what we have access to. That's what Julian Assange has proven, that whether you believe he had a significant pull in this election or not, certainly the information played a factor. And if you have access to information, and it's something that can sway minds one way or another, whether it's revealing surveillance, whether it's revealing emails, whether it's revealing all kinds of cover-ups and scandals, well, that's something that should not be hidden. It shouldn't be buried. It shouldn't be kept protected, because we don't want to protect these people. We want to expose these people. We want to remove these people. And we can't let up on that, because as soon as we do, they become legitimate, they become powerful, they become permanent.
Yep, I agree 100%. But that also means we need to start looking at things we haven't been willing to look at. And I believe, you know, Hillary Clinton is part of that club. They mm-hmm. all are.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to look in other areas where we find the representation for us. And I think another area to look at is the younger generations, because they basically were left on the sidelines. Like, yes. Their opinion virtually counted for nothing, and many of them did not vote. So voter turnout is really important, and the raising of awareness, and overall a raising of what I call political intelligence in the United States. As someone who grew up in a different country, I've always been baffled how little the American people know about their own system. And it's not necessarily an educational issue. It's more of a political intelligence issue, like actually knowing how your political system works, which is not something that's necessarily taught in schools.
Well, you raise an excellent point as far as the age issue. In fact, our friend who called up earlier from the protest is under 18 and can vote, but obviously feels strongly about this. And we know a number of kids from the meeting and from Maker Faire and just from around the country in general who are very politically astute and very frustrated because they have no voice. But think about this. Those kids will be old enough to vote in 4 years. And a lot of the people that have their fear and hatred and prejudice, well, they're going to become less relevant. Let's put it that way. This will change the landscape. The landscape is changing. There is no question about that. This is a devastating blow, what happened, but it can't last forever. You know, unless we pass on the fear and the hatred to our kids and it sprouts. But, you know, when I look at the younger generation today, I see something that was not present a few years ago. I see acceptance of all kinds of diversity and, not just acceptance, but celebration. And that is going to continue to grow and blossom.
Yeah, I think it's important for us to help interpret a lot of what is going on, because there's so many things they just don't get. They look at it and they're like, okay, can't relate. And they go back to their phone or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we have an important responsibility to lead and to listen, but also to help with understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess that's it for us. Bernie, any last words from you?
I just think we got to pay attention. I agree with Dalcini that we need to raise our political intelligence, not individually just, but our friends, family members, everybody in our communities need to be more aware of what's going on around us, or we would not have been blindsided by this. I think ignorance is really the fault of what happened here.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to be talking about this, obviously, for a long time to come. Write to us at Off the Hook, OTH, at 2600.com. I'd like to hear your feelings and opinions and ideas. And just remember to stick together. You're not alone. And we're going to react to what happened together. And there will be better days. Good night.
This is Saul Williams.
And this is Michael Frank from Spearhead.
And this is WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
This is Reverend Jesse Jackson of the Rainbow Push Coalition. Please call and support WBAI, non-commercial, peace and justice radio in New York.
People moving out, people moving in. Why? Because of the color of the skin. Run, 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 but you sure can't hide.
Hello world, welcome to the Personal Computer Show, the original personal computer radio show. Joining me this evening is Max Schmid, and we can also be heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN.FM. We will entertain telephone calls on this show at about the half-hour mark, and if you wish to comment or ask a question, the call number is 347-335-0818. I repeat, we will entertain telephone calls at the half-hour mark. If you wish to comment or ask a question, the call number is 347-355-0818. But let's get to some of the news items first. Well, before that, I have an editorial comment to make. You know, the Apple iPhone operating system is referred to as iOS, and of course the I stands for iPhone and OS is the operating system, so they named it iOS. And but I'm going to take liberty and use that acronym iOS to mean something else. the Internet of Sales, and it started right after Halloween. Year after year, the holidays arrive a little earlier, and 2016 is really no exception. Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, was traditionally the day that retailers met their course and with each sale propelling them further into the black, or when they're in the black, they're making a profit. Well, today, Black Friday simply means fantastic offers designed to entice shoppers to purchase the newest must-have gadget, whether they really need it or not, at low cost. Cyber Monday is a marketing term for the Monday after Thanksgiving. The term Cyber Monday was created by marketing companies to persuade people to shop online. The term made its debut in 2005 in shop.org press release. Cyber Monday has quickly become the biggest online shopping day of the year. But now the lines are blurred. Black Friday now starts right after Halloween. Cyber Monday starts at the same time. I call this the Internet of Sales. Maybe I should call it the Internet of Silliness. How many of us would be making purchases if the sale item was not hyped as a fantastic sale bargain, selling at prices too good to be true, and you just can't let it be bypassed whether or not you need it? Well, for instance, do you really need another notebook? Or how about a brand new notebook from Dell for under $100? By the way, that will be available, and I'll cover that a little later. But before we do that, I have a couple of quick items to go through in the news, and then we're going to have an interview that that was scheduled for last week before the election. But hey, be as it may, we were preempted. So, but let me tell you that our special guest a little later will be Dr. Rebecca Mercury. This interview was recorded last week for broadcast, but we were preempted. She's the founder of Notable Software and is one of the world's leading experts on electronic voting and ballot tabulation. She's also a digital forensic investigator, typically working for criminal defense on a wide variety of cases, including hacking, murder, and financial fraud. But before we get to that, let me just talk about a couple of things in the past week that we should be aware of. Web of Trust browser extensions. In other words, it's a plugin for browsers like Firefox and Chrome and all the others. And what it is that it's a plugin so that it's based on crowdsource information and its use. If you were to sign on to a browser, let's say, and if you have some knowledge of the browser, I'm sorry, if you have knowledge of some of the website you're going to, you can mark it as, hey, this is a safe, trusted website. Or you could say, hey, be careful with it. Or you could say, hey, don't go there. In other words, and then based on the collective tally of all these markings, you come up with a green, yellow, or red rating system. Red meaning the site is a poor reputation. And the idea is that the rating system and warning boxes that appear when you land on a red rated site will keep you safe from scam sites or scam sites with potential malware. However, as with many free services created by a private company, WOT, or Web of Trust, it's a free service. But what's their business model? How do they make money? Well, the way they make the money is that they collectively, they collect all that usage data from its user, the browsing history in this case, and anonymizing it, or at least they claim they anonymize it, and selling the data to firms looking to analyze a larger data set. Now, the problem is that what they give is way too much information. It's not hidden. It's really not anonymized. And this was brought out by a German company. And the kind of information that they were giving out includes things like IP address, what you're searching for. Most people don't realize that if you were to go, like, say, Bing.com, okay, that's your search, or, you know, you want to do a search on it. When you bring up the website, it would say Bing.com. And if you were to say Corvette, a red Corvette or something like that, you might be interested in a car. And that gets embedded into the URL, and it does another search. So that sometimes the website will convert that information, and you can't make heads or tails out of it. But other times, the information is sitting right there. So if you have the IP address, which means someone who's using the data, they may not know exactly who you are because it's anonymized, but at least they know where, you know, on what machine or what area it is, and it's not very private at all. I remember a couple weeks ago I was doing a search, and I was looking for a particular item, and it's the first time I've looked for that item because I was asked, you know, how to do something, and I went to BH Photo Video, and they had it. I said, okay, I'll go back to it later, and I went to another site, and before I knew it, as I go to other sites, all of a sudden I get all these pop-up ads advertising that same item, of course, at different either lower or higher prices at other sites. Hey, that's not fair at all. So my take on it is that if you're currently using Web of Trust in your browser, it's probably a good idea to manually uninstall it until they can figure out how to correct this problem. And you know what? This add-on, as much as it's a great idea, it isn't worth the risk of having a data leak to a third party. So take that as a fact of life. In the, you know, we were preempted the last 3 weeks. Boy, I don't even know what this place looks like anymore. Actually, it's the same, it hasn't improved. Microsoft has now officially, and we have mentioned this a number of times, that Microsoft has officially stopped selling Windows 7 Professional and Windows 8.1. What is meant by that is that they have stopped selling this to OEMs, and in this case, OEMs would be manufacturers, people like Lenovo, HP, Dell, and so on, so that these manufacturers can no longer sell machines or sell through machines either online or to retailers with Windows 7 or Windows 8.1. Now, you may still find some of these available because it's in the retail chain, and they may be dropping a low price on it. And I was asked recently, he says, well, if I buy one of those, how do I upgrade it? You can upgrade it. Now, but you have to upgrade it with Windows 10 build 1511 or 1511. Build 1511 means it was Windows 10 released in the year 2015 in November. Now, Microsoft has officially taken all of that ISO software off. In other words, ISO means it's a binary file, and originally it was available from Microsoft that you downloaded. You could then add a loader to it, and it becomes a full-blown Windows distribution. And if you had Windows 7 or Windows 8 or 8.1, you could upgrade it and have a legitimate copy of Windows 10. I just want to say that if you do that, you have to make sure that if you go from Windows 7, 8, or 8.1 to Windows 10, that Home Premium to Home Premium, Pro to Pro, you can't do a crossover there, and you have to go correspondingly 32-bit OS to 32-bit OS on Windows 10 and 64-bit OS to 64-bit OS on Windows 10. Now, can you still download Windows Build 1511 in ISO format? No. Well, let me just take that back. There are pirate sites, but I'm not going to advocate downloading from pirate sites because you don't know how valid it is, and people just throw it up there, and there's so much garbageware, malware, and so on. You can't trust it. But some companies are still offering this version of Windows, Windows Build 1511, but it's no longer an ISO file. They have so-called put their own loader on, or they have enhanced it. You take your risk. So we'll talk more about that later. And, oh, yeah, I got to mention, we didn't have a chance to, in the last 3 weeks, to do any pitching for the station. But you know what? I'm not going to wait for the next fundraising. If you want to, we still have that premium available. It's called the Windows 10 distribution kit. It's 4 DVDs. We're through with fundraising, but if you're interested in still getting it, I'm pretty sure that if you were to go to WBAI and go to the website and do a search on it, and if you can't find it, send me an email at hank@pcradio.org, and I'll point you to it. And these are still available, 4 DVDs, so that it covers all different versions of 10, 32 bits, or Pro, or Home Premium, and you could then upgrade it. So, yes, you can still probably pick up these bargain Windows 7 and 8 and 8.1 systems so long as they're still in the chain. So, that's the good news. And I'm going to cover one more thing before I go to the interview with Rebecca.